deliver the questions and we can answer them in the Q&A. So, a warm welcome to Wuschel. I saw this talk at the programming night before. It's about cat pictures, it's about borderline, and this talk includes some topics that were not included in the Gulasch programming night. Hi, welcome and great that the tech works. First a disclaimer, this is about me and my experiences. My diagnosis is from 20 years ago. I have several psychic issues, and this is about borderline today. And we are going in a bit deeper than at the GPN. This will not be medically complete. I am an expert for myself, but I'm very much a laywoman, and I can say gendering is very important to me. And in psychology, there is this idiotic distinction between men and women. I'm sorry about that. I don't like that, but I have to stay medically correct. So this talk will be in German, but some of the graphs will be in English because there is no good German science about this. So who am I? But one issue with borderline is a problem with identity. So if you ask me, who am I? Or who are you? Today I will say something else, something different from tomorrow. So my identity changes, and is this identity really me? Or did I just take over some opinion of someone else? So, one technique from psychotherapy is when you're getting asked, ask your loved ones, what would they say? And these slides will be on Mastodon if you want to maybe check if you might be affected. And I really think it's a good idea to think about it. And also, asking your loved ones to describe you also makes it easier, lets you train to accept positive words about yourself. So, one nice thing I've heard was, you can't be described, you have to be experienced. So yeah, I am a fan of Doctor Who. I also post sunsets for the psyche. There are a lot of cats, and I hope they won't disturb the talk. And every day I post a picture of the miniature Wonderland, also for the psyche. You can talk to me about it later, maybe. And every time someone offers me a vacuum, I have to buy it. And it makes my husband crazy. So, my personality disorder does not define who I am. It does explain parts of me. So, what am I not? What is someone with a psychical illness not? Yes, we do have a mental illness. Maybe you have more than one. But that is not my personality. I say I am a borderliner. You can also say I have borderline. I might talk about the distinction between the two. But it's not my identity. I'm not crazy. Well, I am, but yeah. I'm not ashamed because of my personality. I'm just me. And also, I'm the same person I was before you learned that I have borderline. So we have trust issues. Maybe I have some behavior that's different from the norm, but that I have borderline, people learn that late about me, and I'm still the same person. It's important to me that it's not an excuse. My mental illness is not an excuse, it's just a reason, it's an explanation. An excuse is always, well, nothing can be done, there's no progress, and it's not my, I don't have to do anything. And an explanation is, yeah, there is a reason, and I can do something about it. It's a different result. One keeps me back, and one helps me advance. So we, one example I used to explain the difference with the cat door. So the cat door sometimes freezes over, and there is condensed water that lets it freeze closed. So you could say, yeah, nothing can be done about it, or yeah, I know what's happening, I can now work on it. One diagnosis criteria is chronic inner emptiness. So now imagine this child book, Who Am I, is just a cover, and I never find out what's within it, because all the pages are white. But you are the text within the book. And you can't find anything within the book. You are the book, but you cannot find what's within it. And that's one explanation of inner emptiness. I want to feel myself, and that then leads to dysfunctional behavior. So those are a lot of metaphors. It's like speed drafting. It's like being in a boat that gets pushed from waterfall to waterfall, and you could just tip over and lose your life in the water. And it's a horror trip you can't control. And loved ones sometimes explain borderliners as forces of nature. And it's a bit like a roller coaster. And honestly, I cannot explain it, how it is, because of this inner emptiness. But about the diagnostics. So one is on the left, one's the right, one's the right. I like them very much. Let's just talk about the optics. And what's problematic about these sheets? So, look at these images. Many people nowadays, they just Google quickly. I want to know something, and then they check the images, but they don't read anything. And let's look at the images. What can you see? What is the stereotype? What do you think? All borderliners are female. They have a skirt. They have long hair. Again, not my opinion. I already talked about that. And the other person, short hair and pants, probably male. Yeah, great. So normal people are male and borderliners are female. And that's a stereotype. That's a prejudice. And that's of course not right. And it's also not true that all borderliners use these huge knives to injure themselves. That's just not right. So, for one, that's only one form of self-injury, and also, that's just one of the 9 criteria that can lead to a borderline prognosis. Then, readers might think that every borderline person has all the symptoms. If you check these sheets, can you see what has to be there? Do borderliners have all the symptoms? Just one? What are the criteria? I can't.
Sheet von Adobe stopped me, also was mental so, therapist sein soll.
Mental therapist, what's that supposed to be? I have a vague idea. Do I have self-control? Don't I? I don't know. So, I think it is very difficult to use these sheets. So please, do not diagnose yourself. Don't use articles in the papers. Because everything can be part of a normal human any day of the week. Everyone can become angry if things don't work out as they want. So if I look at this couple on the sheet, how they argue, so I think every non-affected person can be like this, can be scared that it's the end. So there are more or less working self-tests in the internet, so if after this talk you think, I might be affected, you could do a self-test. But it's really not specific. Why? So these are the possible results. So how many borderline affected were identified by the test? So should I do it by my feeling? How many? So we have 10 criteria here, which is confusing. Just one of them identified a borderliner. I do not understand why it's 10 criteria, not 9, like in the medical journals. So I also want to say that these 9 criteria in DSM-5 are very superficial. But again, these self-tests do not replace a proper test by professionals. So if you think that you might be affected by borderline or some other mental illness, go see a doctor, maybe a psychiatrist, maybe you know someone already. Go there, tell them, I think I might be affected by a borderline personality disorder, and then they can do a proper test. So if you think it today, go tomorrow. And end of next year, you might have your diagnosis. But it's important to me. Please, even if you have the diagnosis, you are the same person as before. The only thing that changes is you have a diagnosis and can get help. But again, the personality disorder does not define who you are, who I am. It just explains parts of the personality, of the behavior. So now let's look at the 9 criteria. So, my Viennese grandpa said, nope, it's too long, can't do it. And why was it too long? Well, he could use waffle dough and he could get you to his talks. But he's not here today. So, suicidal behavior and self-harming behavior. So, it's very important to see the difference between the two. Especially with borderline, suicidal behavior is mostly induced by being overwhelmed by yourself. And you just wanted to stop. And you think, well, maybe it might be a way. Of course it isn't, but the thought might occur. And then when people say, well, you just want people to notice you, well, it's not a problem, they just want attention. Please, if someone tells you that they think about suicide, it would be better that someone is there. Take them seriously, not just afterwards. If something happens, everyone is up at arms and says, it's so bad, but please think about it, take it seriously beforehand. So, impulsivity in at least 2 self-harming incidences. So I already said it's complete loss of control.
Der Zugang zum inneren Affekt und Impulskontrollraum ist uns nämlich einfach versperrt.
So, borderliners usually do not have impulse control. And then we learn that certain behaviors help with a feeling of control. Then it expands. So, spending money turns into spending too much money. And so it turns into excessive behavior very quickly, and looking for help is easily said. So, when preparing for this talk, I noticed that there are just these walls that I cannot overcome myself. So borderliners protect themselves with a lot of walls and pump guns, and we shoot at a distance. So I can't talk individually about all the criteria, but I have most of them or all of them in the talk. So if you're interested, I can already recommend books. So unfortunately, these are in German. The first one is I Hate You, Please Don't Leave Me. Then after that, it came out Torn Between Extremes. And lastly, The Art of Talking to a Volcano. And those books are really recommended. But back to the walls around us. Each of us has different roles that we play. And me, I'm holding, doing this talk. And I have cats, and I have friends, so, and these personality parts of my personality are great walls, so everyone only sees one part of me. And today, I am just a cat mom, and tomorrow I'm something else, and combining all these roles is very difficult. But also modeling how people perceive you can be a wall. And when I leave the house, even though I have panic attacks, I do my photo stories to fix myself. And just what panic I have at the moment, I do not show that, and that's molding my perception, or what other people can perceive of me on the outside. So probably you do not know a borderliner, you just know one of the roles, one of the walls. So usually we have different kinds of walls. Walls of stone, we do not like walls with holes in them. But yeah, we do like our walls. So there is a lot of kinds of walls. They are quite distinct and individual. How many we have, what kinds of walls, and we really defend those walls. And I have a tank cat. Why the walls? So borderline is a psychic development disorder from early childhood. So here we have this development that healthy people have. And for borderliners, they never developed this basic trust and thus never could develop the resilience and emotional skin. And I also talked about this at the GPN. So there are genetics about this. You can not inherited, but you can inherit a certain likeliness. So the amygdala is very small for us, but it's very sensitive. So our limbic system sometimes reacts wrongly to stress. So, on this normalized stress level, 0 is you're dead, and 100 is crisis, and borderliners wake up above 50 already. So in the morning, they are above 50. So for me, I have ADD or ADHD and borderline, and then there is wakefulness that could work because it affects both. But have you tried wakefulness with ADD? There's a squirrel, and there, it doesn't work that well. And depression leads to me, when I go to therapy, having problems. So, early childhood trauma and children having very little connections doesn't help. So when Dr. Who talks to a child, you know, when grown-ups tell you that you're fine and you think they are lying to make you feel better, yeah, everything's going to be fine. And when children, they notice that the grown-ups are lying, they still think that they are gonna fix it, and that is basic trust. The first trust, that's the emotional security that you're grown up, is helpful, is gonna fix it, and that all the world can fix all your problems. And it's also the trust that if something is wrong, it's an exception. So, your adult says, I'm gonna call you to 6 p.m. And at 7 p.m., they haven't called yet. Adults will say, well, something will be wrong. And the child will say, well, it's an exception. They will call. But yeah, so this is the difference. And with borderliners, building trust is very difficult or maybe impossible. So let's talk about the missing or broken resiliency. It's the resistance power of the psyche. And some of them are already broken with borderline. And if the psyche is already broken, then the physical factors cannot work. So sleep is obviously an option. Movement, food, everything. So if people have the trouble to really work on their issues, then it stays, of course. And if a borderliner then experiences a trauma, then that's obviously bad, and everything can trigger it. Noises, a bottle dropping, for example, or people who were maybe part of the trauma, or maybe they are just wearing the same green jacket. And then your thoughts jump back to the trauma. Smells, maybe some Christmas cookies. And then places, of course, if you have to go there again, or just a house that looks kind of similar, or maybe it has the same roof. Then feelings, suddenly I feel sad, I don't know why, then you think about it, ah, right, the situations. So the trauma happened on your way home, and then any way home, lifelong, can trigger it, even if it's a different home. And a very, very, really bad trigger is that certain trauma is talked about in media, and it really makes sense. It should be talked about. Social mobbing, for example. But if you are affected and it triggers you, it's not funny anymore. I had it in the cinema once, and one ad had cybermobbing, and I said, thank you, why don't you warn me beforehand, because that can really trigger traumas. So we need walls for self-protection. We do not have basic trust, we do not have resiliency to handle traumas and triggers. So we need our walls, and we need our pumpkins and our fighting cats and the tank cats. But walls. And I think you noticed they are also like prisons for ourselves. So I am sitting there and I see the walls, but I cannot see the nice landscape that might be behind it. So in therapy, we can learn to maybe lessen our walls or maybe try to stay less protected. Everyone can try to break in my walls, but only I can actually do it. So, about friends. Friends are really important. They are positive experiences with friends. And of course, positive social contacts. But being friends with borderliners, it's a challenge for the friends and for us. And let's talk about this.
So, I found this light bulb here of the neurodiversities. And so, with people that aren't affected, at least not borderline affected people, this can be separated into the stranger stage, then the acquaintance stage, then the casual friend stage, then the close friend, and then the intimate friend stage. So, these go sequentially, one after another. But at some point, maybe one gets stuck. This is can be very difficult with borderline, especially when seeing this with other people, then maybe it looks like you can skip some parts, but this is not possible here. So it's very important that us borderliners don't really know the stranger stage. The stranger change stage means that the existence of the others isn't really known to us. So a person that is with us on the tram every day, maybe, where all the contacts happen coincidentally. And so the feeling is entirely neutral. There is no justification to separate this into a friend or not. And so I thought the weeping angels are actually a very good example for the stranger stage. So if I could see you during this talk, then maybe I could ask you if you know what the weeping angels are, but so maybe I should explain it for a second. So the weeping angels are a somewhat bad thing in the Doctor Who universe, and they threaten humanity, and if one touches them, one dies. They can touch whenever, but they can only touch if they're not seen. So you always have to keep them in your eye. You can always have to watch them. You can't even blink. Don't even blink. If you blink, you're dead. Don't turn your back. Don't look away and don't blink. I know David Tennant is better at this than I am. So later in an episode, a friend of the Doctor is walking through a wood full of weeping angels with a device that the Doctor uses to give her the path because she's blind. If the weeping angels knew that she's blind, she'd have a big problem. But now, imagine that you don't have this device. That would be borderline. It means always being in the dark forest, always knowing there's lots of danger and having no orientation, right? We don't have a sense for that. So our brain is always separating everything into good and bad, friend and foe. And this is something that we don't even notice. We don't know the stranger stage, like the weeping angels. Actually, a friend of mine watched this episode for the first time later, and she asked, please not to see them again, the angels. And I think this was like this with a lot of people that saw this episode, and maybe even have it with statues of angels. And maybe this helps explaining the larger context of borderline, because it represents these paranoid imaginations. And it stems from a lack of fundamental trust. It always seems like everyone is looking at me and supervising me and distrusting, and so there's no trust, only walls. It's very hard to describe this situation, and I think try to describe it with the separation of body and psyche, and maybe you're surprised by a few things you do, but that's a very simple, not really relevant form of this. But maybe it can happen for us that for days or weeks we live in something like a deja vu, like not really the classic deja vu, the black cat, but it's maybe hard to differentiate whether that's something I'm doing or someone else, or if this is actually my reality or... Well, okay, let's go to the other friendships. So the next thing is the loose friendship. Maybe the person in the canteen, maybe people that I do small talk with or shitpost with on the internet. There's not really a lot of emotional connection. We, as borderliners, we usually don't have that kind of friendship either. Borderliners don't really know, can't really do this interhuman karate. We can't really, we have too many walls and pump guns. We can't really shitpost. This is actually maybe not even, they're not really capable or willing to participate in these surface level interactions. Like small talk. All right, I don't know if you read everything, but I'll maybe post this on later as well. So that's another problem. So let's go to the loose friendship, the casual friend. So this maybe will have some planned interaction. Maybe we're together at a congress and want to meet up. Maybe we'll meet up in a park or something. And also we're interested in the successes or events in somebody else's life, but you probably guessed that this doesn't really work for borderliners as well, because it's usual for this kind of friendship to see each other without walls and masks, and but borderliners are fearful of dropping masks or walls, and because then we're without protection, and this is something that may be very difficult. You can maybe imagine this by looking at all of the people that you wanted to meet with personally and wanted to drop your mask with in the last couple of years. And in friendships, and friends of borderliners usually are like in all of these wild situations, like in the volcano, on the roller coaster, and always shot with pump guns from behind walls. And if you get back to the small talk and the shitposting that I mentioned earlier, for many people this is way too much work and to put into a social context, because today lots of these interactions are very surface level, and that's very difficult for borderliners. The next level would be the close friendship. So there's a personal and emotional connection here, and we will talk about everything. Maybe there's a lot of time spent together, and this is something that is more of a conscious choice to participate in this kind of friendship. And borderliners, maybe you can think, are more prone to go into closer friendships, because you have gone through a more rough interaction, maybe, and then... But no, sorry. Close friendships with borderliners are always lots of work, and it's not really fun. But, so there are other challenges there. There is a pattern of unstable and intense connections between people that I already mentioned in part one during the GPN. And then the other challenge here is the borders and the barriers and boundaries of both persons. And it often happens that borderliners are too aggressive and react too sharply to maybe things like "I'm worrying about you" and sentences like that. And we often pull back a lot and feel the loss that's associated. So there are maybe some solutions here. It's very important to communicate a lot, find common boundaries, and explain the reasons for everything. I think it's important so to find an individual issue and talk about it. What are things that we maybe don't want to talk about? What are things that topics that we share? What are material about us? What maybe do we? What would I want to spend money for, and what do I don't want to spend money for? What are the times that I am available, and what times do I not want to be available? And also, of course, the mental boundaries, my opinions, my taste, my body boundaries, maybe also. This is often something with autistic people, where hugs are maybe not wanted as much. Talk about this early and make it very clear. And always see the inner child of the borderliner, which I also talked about at the GPN. So other experiences I made is that online contact can be really nice for this. We have contacts via messengers and chat, and that gives us walls that actually won't be broken and can't be broken. And also your friends can channel your identity maybe. Especially something like not being available at certain times. And it's also very important that the internet and online friendships can't be the only path of communication. This is something, especially with borderliners, where especially due to the fears we have, is this can be very unfun. And maybe a small anecdote regarding this, that my best friend was actually doubted by my psychologist for a long time, and they said, like, I know this identity, I know where they work, I know where they live, I know what their partner does, I've seen photos, I've called them, I think that's enough. But that's not enough for a psychologist, actually, for certain reasons. So I told the psychologist that we actually met at some point, and the psychologist said, it's still not enough, but I think at some point the identity is sufficiently proven. Okay, so another challenge is oversharing. So with autism, this is info dumping. And this is a general thing with neurodivergencies. And we often talk about what's happening with us. And there's often a need to get more advice about how to act, and a lot of people want to maybe tell you how to act, and another solution there is to set some boundaries. Then the inner child is another issue. This is borderline have a very, very large and important inner child, and this is something that lots of their friends will have to interact with. And this is something that, for me, for example, I have lots of stuffed animals that we play with. And this is a kind of communication that we use. And maybe the hobbies can maybe be interpreted as very childish, going to maybe a fun fair. And ideally, this is something that can also speak on it for itself. So every day I post on Mastodon once, and I think after 18 years of marriage, people don't really need a reason to separate. And I think all of this typical playing with each other, maybe playing with words, is something that is a purely friendly thing. But so this is definitely not flirting or maybe meant derogatory or anything like that. So parallel play is something that they often do, which is being in the same room and doing separate things. And this is something that strengthens this fundamental trust, that we don't have to do anything together, we can be fine together in one room. Did you know that the penguin pebbling is a thing where penguins will gift each other stones? And there's lots of small things, like and this is something that artists have a lot, where they want to help each other. While and borderliners are often like saying that they do not want help, maybe.
So if you maybe now were wondering what is neurodivergence, because that's something that borderliners can handle well. And because, so the waffle dough person is complaining all the time, I have to have so many talks. Well, don't offer so many. So, borderliners, it's always fear of loss. Always. All the time. We are always afraid that our relationships end. No matter how long I've known someone, no matter what we've went through together, it gets worse the closer we get. We do not have basic trust. So we can develop some form of trust, but it's very difficult. So let me illustrate this fear of loss. Borderliners always wonder, am I important to this person? Even if they say yes, they might just pretend. We always expect something to happen, maybe an accident, but we need them to support us and tell us again and again, yes, but we will question it anyway. And how many ways can they find to tell me that I'm important, but still? And overthinking and overanalyzing, you have no idea how important a missing point, a missing period in a sentence can get in a borderline brain. What can help against fear of loss is routines, just as with children, bringing them into bed. And it's a routine that can help children with their basic trust. And it also gives us structure, stability, security, orientation. And also for us, it's the basis for trust. The thing is, we see something more quickly as a routine than our friends. So, for a few days, at 9:30, I get a message. And then one day it doesn't come. And then I turn crazy. So my best friend and I, we always say good night in a special way. If it's said differently, if it comes late, I'm already triggered. So I have a lot of tweets or throats. So if they don't come, I'm afraid. And I say it this way because I notice I'm annoyed by it. But yeah. So if my husband works longer or shorter, if they change routine unannounced, that's a huge trigger for fear of loss. So if you have a borderliner and there are routines, please remember to announce a change. Then, honesty is very important because due to the overanalyzing, we notice even nonverbal hints. So if you say to the question, how are you? Yeah, well, and if there's something, headache or anything, for borderliner, that's a lie. And friendship and trust, it gets damaged even by these little lies. And lies is in quotation marks here. So, trust and the relationship to a borderliner means complete honesty. Never do an empty promise to a borderliner. Only promise what you can keep. And that sounds really exhausting, also for us, even for me if I look at the slides. but these are the symptoms. And honestly, in this, there's also strength. We have loss of, we have fear of loss, but it makes us very loyal. Because if I have fear of losing someone, I don't want to lose the relationship. I don't want to leave the relationship. So we notice who we can trust, but people can trust us. And a friend told me, well, someone you trust 100%. I know I can trust 100%. And that really moved me. So if we can leave the symptoms and become stable, that also tells me a lot about the personality of friends. And I always tell my friends, please recognize what a work and what an achievement that is. So in a relationship with a borderliner, there will be conflicts. But having borders or saying where to stop, it's also a skill. And more difficult than with a borderliner, it will never get. And oversharing works both ways. So borderliners can listen quite well, except maybe if they have ADD as well. But even then, they are really empathic. And they are really interested in the other person, because they don't do small talk, we don't do small talk. And also, we can wake up the inner child in anyone. My inner child will wake up your inner child. Real close friends that can handle a borderliner again and again. They get the closest friends. Even loose friendships are important for practice. But the true friends, they become the security net, the safety net. And they don't see the borderliner black and white, but in color. And with you, we can find courage and basic trust to go into the world. And an emotional safety net is a skill. Friends, we can trust. We can talk to about anything. They are our emotional safety net. But that's also the same for non-borderliners. So these pictures I chose very, very specifically. And I know all of you are watching, and I hope you recognize yourselves. So the trust persons, the trust people, do not have to have contact, or even, so they do not have to be friends. But it should be possible for the partner, at least for the partner, to contact them in the emergency, in an emergency. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a safety net. And for borderliners, it's important for us to be able to talk about all the others to our trusted people. Because I cannot trust myself. I cannot trust my emotions. So it's really important for me to be able to talk to a friend and say, well, see, this is what I noticed. Am I weird, or is it the situation that's really weird? So yeah, check your reality. So the task of the safety net is not that bad. Give stability, provide a basis for basic trust. Help practice friendship to really try things out and remind them of resiliency and skills. And like Winnie Pooh said, you're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. And that's what friends always give each other. And that's what I want to provide to you, and I will add that to Mastodon definitely. The question, who is part of your emotional safety net? Who can you always talk to with any emotion, any chaos in your psyche, anything? Who do you know will have your back, will not disappoint you? And it should be not a one-way street. There should be reciprocity. And close friendships will change a borderliner, because these people will leave, let them through our walls, and they help us heal a bit. And we do not have to promise not to forget our close friends. We are unable to. A bit like Winnie Pooh and Christopher Robin. So I'll let you read this, so I can have a drink. It's the last chapter of Winnie Pooh. Hope that wasn't too quick. So the last chapter of Winnie Pooh. So the next step is intimate friendship. These friends know everything of each other. Fears, dreams, goals, triggers, everything. Crises and good times are handled together. There is blind trust. That's rare amongst non-borderliners. And in psychology, it's not clear if this is healthy. Because with borderliners, such a close friendship can become a favorite person relationship. And I thought about this a lot. So let's look about behavioral biology, imprinting. It's irreversible form of learning. Reaction to a trigger, behavior, and things we do all the time. So basically, it's the first operating system that we have. And it's difficult to have a different operating system. No, sorry, it's about Twilight now. But it's well written there. Look at this quotation here. It's like gravity. Your whole center shifts. Suddenly, it's not the Earth holding you here. You would do anything, be anything she needs. A friend, a protector, a brother. So this fixation on one person to do anything they need at the moment. It's not easy for the other person as well. So, do they have a choice? Well, why would should she want to have a choice? She gets everything. Well, yeah, no, that's quite toxic. So, the favorite person of a borderliner can be anyone. Partner, kid, best friend, therapist. Another patient, your pet, celebrities. So it doesn't have to be, there doesn't have to be a relationship, but usually there is. So the favorite person really changes your interests, your opinions, what you like, but it's also your the filter for your whole world, for your whole experience of the world. So, one example would be, today you like Windows, and your favorite person likes Linux, and now suddenly you don't understand why you ever liked Windows. But it's quite unstable. So, if you then ask the borderliner for their identity, they will answer, well, I'm the friend of. What's your identity? Well, and what this isn't. It's not romantic. It's not a relationship, it's not an affair, and it's not really friendship. Favorite person relationship can come from anything, but this extreme connection does not come from any feeling of any kind, but it's part of the symptoms. But it's very important also talking about therapy. that the other person can handle it, because otherwise the therapist will probably say, you should break it off. So this person, favorite person is the center of your world. So Woody and Buzz, they are best friends, but both only exist for Andy. As soon as he enters the room, they are just his toys. And if he's not in the room, they just wonder, when is he coming back? So Pooh and Piglet, Winnie the Pooh and Piglet, they think the same about Christopher Robin. So as soon as he is grown up and he forgot his friends in the forest, then they are floating. C-3PO and R2-D2 are not a great example. So they might not even realize that they are with Luke, so not a great example. So we borderliners, we notice that it's not healthy, but we can't do anything about it. And that is not nice, not a good feeling. And the favorite person, they get everything. Everything hits them about the borderliner. And it's overwhelming. So for the safety net and the partner, it's difficult because they can get the feeling that they don't mean as much for the borderliner because they drop everything to be with their favorite person. And if there are conflicts with a favorite person, they have to catch it, and there will be a lot of issues. So maybe they notice there is a favorite person, misinterpret, and, well, it gets annoying. So, and the favorite person, it's just overwhelming. Everything is extreme. All the symptoms are there. And of course, they have this huge responsibility because they are the center and the filter of the world, of the worldview for a complete person, and they feel responsible. For us borderliners, we notice that all the symptoms get worse. We become emotionally dependent. We lose the bit of identity we have. The fear of loss gets worse, and everything gets more intensive. And then there is a period missing in a message, and that triggers everything. Of course, it might just be a typing error, but yeah. But no one can hurt a borderliner as much as a favorite person, because it's an unhealthy level. But there might be a risk for codependence as well. I don't want to further explain it, but yeah, maybe look it up. So in Twilight, not only Jacob is maybe a bit weird in this. So again, I give you time to read.
When you were gone, when the meteor had fallen over the horizon, everything went black.
When you were gone, when the meteor had fallen over the horizon, everything went black. Nothing had changed, but my eyes were blinded by the light. I couldn't see the stars anymore, and there was no more reason for anything. And the loss of the favorite person feels like we are dying ourselves. Of course, our identity got defined by the favorite person, and that's breaking away. And this loss, it feels as if you can't breathe anymore. The air is missing and part of you is missing. So it sounds like a favorite person relationship has to be toxic. And yeah, it is exhausting for the borderliner and for the favorite person. And it's everything but easy. And it shouldn't be normalized. But because borderliners can drop back into old behaviors again, it's difficult, and you have to keep working on it. And I had this quote before. The bottom line is that if you are in hell, and the only way out is to go through a period of sustained misery. Misery is, of course, much better than hell, but it is painful nonetheless. By refusing to accept the misery that it takes to climb out of hell, you end up falling back into hell repeatedly, only to have to start over. You have to start over and over again. So you have to keep working, keep learning. So we have to try the same again and again. Unlike what Einstein said, it's not craziness, it's not insanity. So there's hope for the favorite person relationship. You do not have to break off all contact. It might seem like it's the best idea, but there might be a situation or reasons why it might not be a solution. So if there is a good friendship outside the favorite person relationship, then there is hope. So if the favorite person relationship does not hurt the healthy part of the relationship and they do not want to lose each other as a friend, and the conflicts can be solved by compromising or by agreeing to disagree, common work and communication must be possible. And if they see positive development, so favorite person, borderliner, safety net and partner have to agree that there is progress, then there is realistic hope. And then it's favorite person, hold on, the pain ends. So listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts. The impossibilities, the won'ts. Listen to the never-haves. Then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be. And that's something that is part of therapy as well. Be aware there can be change, even if it doesn't look like it. The pain can end. But solutions for the favorite person relationship and all the other symptoms always need readiness of everyone involved to work on it. And the favorite person relationship has to be recognized and named as such. So steps can be taken and symptoms can be reduced and worked on. And it is extreme, but you can be prepared and have to be prepared. Open and honest communication about borderline and the favorite person theme. Ideally between favorite person and the safety net should occur. So there should be contact to the safety net. Meetings and talks with favorite person and some people from the safety net and the partners should occur. But again, a favorite person is not a safety net. A safety net with just one person is not a net. It's a rope, and a rope can break. So again, possible solutions between borderliner and favorite person. Radical acceptance. So the favorite person will always be important. You have to accept that. But you have to keep your identity separate. I'm me, and this is how my safety net describes me. And you are you, and this is how your safety net describes you. But also, what am I for you? What are you for me?
Okay, but another definition of borderline, definitional criterion, are these mood swings. And so, one thing that I already had on the first slide, on the first talk, where they, if you try to save your life in a high stress situation, you don't want to talk about tech. But maybe if I'm laying on the ground and you lie down with me and listen to my problems for the 100th time, that maybe is a bit counterintuitive, but that may be what I need. And also what can be added is that borderlining is also a very impatient. they need something right now. Did you see the bomb on this otter there? Which I think is a very good description. Mood swings can lead to chaos and instability in the head. And because this lack of trust then, we are not sure about how things will look tomorrow. And because I don't know what things are going to look like tomorrow, so I can't plan. And experiencing unplanned situation is like torture. And so I don't want to endure these unplanned situation. And this is, of course, a very difficult thing for psychologists and therapy, because the borderliners want to plan as far into the future as possible. And but maybe if on a plan, maybe on the day that I planned for, maybe my daily mood is very different then. And that is something that can be difficult, especially. And this impatience is also very complex for therapy, because I maybe need a problem solved right now, not next week. And this can also lead to this uncalled for and overly exaggerated anger. And because this is like living with a incalculable volcano. This quote is good. The devil whispered, "You're not strong enough to handle the storm." I replied, "I am the storm." Borderliners will often look at unpredictable forces of nature. You can't handle them like a raw egg to avoid these explosions. That will damage everybody involved. So it's more important to keep in line with the boundaries that were set. So one last thing, handling conflict. Friendship with borderliners will always lead to be different from one borderliner to another, because they are all somewhat different. 5, 7, 8, or 9 out of 9are going to be different. Always handle each borderliner individually, and that can be combinations with other psychological illnesses. Working with borderliners requires openness about the challenges that are going to come. Maybe if I'm in therapy for 3 months, maybe I should not have a smartphone, because that's generally not generally frowned upon. And then when I'm signed up for the therapy, maybe I still have to wait 6 months to find solutions. Maybe you can't really call them, but maybe we can exchange postcards in advance, maybe every week, so, and throw them into a letterbox or something. Maybe if you want to talk about it, we can work with this desire for predictability like that. And also we have to keep in mind this overthinking and overanalyzing. Are you again working, thinking about how difficult this thing is, or maybe how loud somebody else is cutting vegetables in the next room right now? The inner child always has to be kept in mind with these conflicts. In the book Living with a Volcano, there's a solution that is called SET. The S is for self-statement of support, E is for empathy, and T is for truth. So we have to pay attention to the personal worries of the borderliner and their wish to support. Empathy is for the message of empathy with a focus on the experiences and feelings of the borderliner. And truth is about the realistic characterization of the situation and the possible solutions for the borderliner. And the responsibility of the borderliner, especially. And then there's an addition to that, which is up. Understanding and perseverance. Understanding is about being informed and understanding the borderliner and their symptoms. that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody is being assigned blame or responsibility. Maybe you can look for the reason for a kind of behavior. Then, and then we need the perseverance. That is something that is required for the work with bottlenecks. It's And now, for the possible errors with SET, there are some things that SET is not covering, and that's where one can fail in the work with bottlenecks. It's very important to that people working with bottlenecks know what are typical borderline reactions, and maybe when I explain things not quite right, maybe saying something like, yes, this happened to me as well, but that maybe then means you don't really care about me or myself or the situation. An E error might be you're not caring about my feelings. And the answer is no. If you don't have borderlines, then it's probably very unlikely that you can understand the feelings of the borderliner in that situation right now. Maybe I hope I explained that a bit. And that means, and then maybe there will be the, you don't even want to understand me. And then that's a bit more difficult. And then there are the T errors, which are about maybe not mentioning the challenges ahead, and maybe talking about saying that they're responsible for their own errors, for their own situation. And then maybe one day I'm feeling a different identity than another, and then that's a very difficult thing to say. Then, in the practical applications of SET, there's maybe the art of talking to a volcano to be mentioned here. The important thing is in the communication with the borderliner is to be conscious of this SET system, both in communicating with the borderliner and in handling the reaction. Then, also know that how to deal with it when you confront a borderliner. It can be very helpful to keep in mind the way you want to work with them, the rules in talking, maybe even doing it in a written manner, the communication. And always empower the positive side. Then self-reflection is an important thing. Especially so, like when you're running hot, then it's really difficult to probably look at yourself. And of course, this is easier said than done. Empathy can also mean, in this case, be talking about how can we deal with this, like how can we solve the situation? What can we do to maybe occupy you? And then truth statements, which of course should be always referring to the present and not the past. So the goal is not to be the safety net for somebody, or accepting inappropriate behavior. But so as I said earlier, it's about accepting the feelings, not the behavior. And so we want to create a relationship where both sides can respect their boundaries and desires, and also reducing conflict, and not dancing around one another all the time. And then the friendship with the borderliner can be a very special thing, but hopefully not toxic. As I said, borderliners are very loyal souls, and these can be very special friendships because of that. And this is a very good, and friendships are also a very good environment to grow for a borderliner. And as I said, it's very difficult to keep a good relationship with a borderliner, but if it has gotten healthy, but maybe in a good friendship and can involve something like a personal secret language because of all of this overthinking. And maybe there are lots of signs there that then somebody can notice that others would never notice. So this through this overanalyzing, there can be very special relationships that can be created. This is actually something that I tested in real life. Okay, so I only went over time a little bit, and I hope you liked the talk about keeping a relationship with borderliners and explained it a little better. And if do you have any questions or feedback, thank you for listening.
F.
Hallo, seid ihr noch da?
Hi, are you still there?
Jemand von der Regie noch da?
Is anyone still there? Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you. But the directors are missing. I like the talk. Hi. Hello, Internet. Can you hear us?
Ich glaube, du bist auch noch auf dem Stream.
And yeah, I think you are still on the stream.
Ich weiß nicht, der ist verzögert, aber...
So there is a delay, but...
Ich ping mal gerade jemanden an.
I'll ping someone. Or maybe we don't talk. Nobody wanted to listen to my talk.
Ja, willkommen zum Q&A.
Welcome to the Q&A. There are a few questions, but first I want to say thank you very, very much for this talk, for expanding it, and I learned a lot. Yeah, a few things where I thought, yeah, maybe with this and this person, yeah. Maybe as someone related, I might to have to rethink my approach or keep working. So yeah, there are questions from the Signal Angel. One, there's the question, what helps? So if you can name one thing that helped you the most, gave you the most quality of life, what would it be? Is it medication? Or is it maybe concrete self-management strategy, behavioral therapy, and what? I think the question is clear.
Okay, so I think the thing that helped the most for me is DBT. As far as that was possible, it really depends on the other symptoms, whether it's possible, especially with a focus on attention and the tension within myself. So this DBT, which maybe takes 12 to 16 weeks, but maybe also some other things. The safety net as well, having a safety net that is there for me, that is always going through these steps with me, which is maybe very difficult sometimes with certain people, but yeah, having this availability.
So medication is not really playing a huge role, if I got it.
So medicine is a bit difficult there because they have to be adjusted for the main symptoms, and then also psychological medication is always a bit difficult because they of course have side effects, and taking them continuously is sometimes a bit difficult. And also with the ADHS, that which I also have, it often helps more to take the ADHD medicine. And so I can't really say generally, but DBDT is probably helping.
Another question is, how do you distinguish the different issues? So the person who wrote it is schizophrenic and asked, is there maybe a table of what issues, for example, autism, schizophrenia, borderline, and how it's connected to character properties, so overanalyzing or the inner child, that the person is not making obvious to others. They have that because of their schizophrenia. So is there a checklist or something that is schizophrenia but not borderline?
Okay, I would say that I'm more than my psychological illness. It's very individual which symptoms you'll have with your schizophrenia, so that it's very difficult to separate this properly. I can't really say what symptoms stem from my ADHD and which ones stem from my borderline. So this really depends on the personal diagnosis and which therapy you need, and everything is very dependent on that.
Okay, great. So again, about therapy, do you think as a borderliner you need therapy all the time? Or is there a point when you say, well, okay, I'm fine enough now with my borderline that I can handle it, so the therapist is not needed anymore?
I can say this best with the words of my psychologist that I met a while ago. Help. So they said, wait, only, I think you're only going to need one more appointment with me and you'll be perfectly fine for yourself. But I think I still need them as an anchor. Maybe I will need some appointments with them again, but it depends. My psychologist was confused about how few appointments I need with them.
So maybe just a few times, but sometimes someone fully external who just knows about the symptoms.
Yeah, but this is, of course, it's very individual. Borderline is an illness that has so many different factors that can be combined in different ways that there's no one single answer. I think every borderliner does need therapy. But how long? Hard to say.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question. I think you asked it. Why do you post a picture every day from the miniature Wonderland?
So my best friend and I, we were in Hamburg for vacation, and it was a great experience for me. Partly because of that, the man and I, we often were in the miniature Wonderland, and after only 1 hour, I get crazy there because of my ADHD and because there's so much going on. So often when I'm overwhelmed, I try to focus by taking photos, and that helps. And then actually what I noticed that in the miniature Wonderland is that it very much helped me, surprisingly much, when I took some photos. Whoops, I think I'm lacking power now, but it should probably still work. Okay, sorry. How good it is that I'm doing that, and how much it helps me. And to keep in mind how important it is, I keep doing it. Excuse me, tech please, I don't have any power. I think the laptop said it's low on power. Sorry, that's confused me a bit. Yeah, but yeah, so to remind me that these kinds of strats work for me, and the daily sundown I do because 2.5 years ago I said I want a daily task that is fun for me, that is not too difficult, and that means that every day, 5 minutes before sundown, I take a photo of the sundown just to have a small little task for myself.
Very beautiful. Do you look at them yourself, or is the post an important part?
Yeah, I do look at it. Also, when I post it, I make myself conscious of the situation. that's not just I'm looking out of the window and there's a sunrise there, but also, but I am taking this photo and this is an exercise of attention, and it's something that I will probably also look at later.
There is one more question, not a question from the chat, but a comment, but I think it might be important. It's feedback. So a huge thank you for your talk. It was a great talk, and we learned a lot.
Well, thank you that I was allowed to give this talk.
Yeah, it's insane. I really, if I may say so, I think it's really strong of you. You said yourself you have a fear disorder, and then you're doing this, huge respect.